All right, well, let's pray, and we're going to jump into some Bible stuff here in discussion. Father, thank you for your love. Thank you for how you expressed and shown yourself through your Son Jesus, and how your Spirit is here right now amongst us. And so we invite the fullness of your presence here. We recognize your activity. Help us to see more of what you're doing and invite your work more and more deeply into our lives, to wriggle down and find expression in our lives. Lord, I pray for our next 45 minutes together. Pray for your grace, pray for your truth, pray for clarity. Come and have your way. In Jesus' name. Amen. Good. Okay, question for you. How do we know God? How do we know God? Let's talk about that a little bit. How are some ways that we know God? See this, guys. You're going to do that. How do we know God? Okay, through His Word, the Bible, like the written, yeah. How else do we know God? Pardon me? Through worship? Okay. How do we see Him through worship? How do we know Him through worship? Can you guys hear that?
Just what Sherry was saying, you know, what she shared.
Right.
Just the presence and feel of God's, you know, presence. Mm-hmm. And that with God, being in worship.
Cool. So it's an experiential way. Yeah. Okay. How else?
In dreams.
Through what He's made. And did you say?
In dreams.
In dreams. Well, okay, I thought you said trees. And so I was like, okay, wait a minute, you guys are talking the same. But okay, we're going to go this one first, and then we're going to get there. So say a little bit more about that, through what He's made.
Yeah, so in creation, we see how sort of, we see something that the Creator said.
Right. Sure.
The Bible talks about creation.
Yeah.
Of course, worth speech about God.
Absolutely. It's called creation, the fifth gospel. And that's that kind of idea, yeah. So, and dreams.
Yeah, I mean, the Bible's got examples of the Lord's and angels speaking to people in dreams.
Yeah.
And you can have that experience too. I've never had an angel speak to me in a dream, but I've had dreams where I thought that the Lord was speaking to me.
And so you know His will,
yeah,
through dreams.
Yeah.
He expresses His
exactly
will. Yeah. Okay, cool. Any other thoughts about how we know God? Voice in the back of your head speaking. Yeah. Sure. I guess we could call that voice. Sure. Sure. Or sometimes it's us too. Okay. I've got four scriptures that I want four people to look up. And so if you got a Bible, get them out. Can someone please look up Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3. Who's got that one? Derek's got that one. Hebrews 1, chapter 3. Okay, John 12, 44 and 45. Who's got that one? John chapter 12, verses 44 and 45. Who's got it? Who will get it? Okay. And John 14, verse 7. Who's got that one? Okay. And John 14, verses 8 and 9. Okay. John 14, verses 8 and 9. Okay. So if you just decide to find those. And Derek, you want to read really loudly that first one, Hebrews 1, chapter 3, verse 3.
He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of His nature, and He upholds the universe by the word of His power. After making purifications for sins, He sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high.
Okay. Let me read it in a different translation. The Son radiates God's own glory and expresses the very character of God. So the sun expresses the very character of God. So is that it? Is that
it? God, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The sun, capital S, O N. Okay, who had the John 12 one? Steve?
And Jesus cried out and said, whoever believes in me believes not in me, but in him who sent me. And whoever sees me sees him who sent me.
Catch that? When you, and this is Jesus talking. When you see me, you see the one who sent me. You get where this is going? Okay, here's the next one. John 14.
If you really know me, if you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you will know him and have seen him.
Why? Because you've seen me. Jesus. And hopefully you. And you. If you had really known me, you would know who my Father is. Okay, last one. John 14, and then it's just the same. Continue on from the events as you read. Actually, you're going to read chapter 4, verses 8.
Philip said, Lord, show us the Father, and we will be satisfied. Jesus replied, have I been with you all this time, Philip, and yet you still don't know who I am? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. So why are you asking me to show
him? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How do we know God? Through Jesus. That is the primary way that we know God. Through Jesus. The man, the one who was completely human and completely God. That's how we, that's the primary, this is like the appropriate time for the Sunday school answer. Jesus! He's the one. He is how we see what God is like. So through his stories, through his life, he expresses the character of God. That is the primary reason. All those other answers are right, too. But the really right one is Jesus. He's the one. That's how we see who the Father is. Here's another question for you, okay? How can we show others the Father through the life of Jesus? So if we can see God, if we can see the Father through the life of Jesus. And he said, if you've seen me, you've seen my Father. I only do what I see my Father doing, he says elsewhere. I only say what I hear my Father saying. So he's basically like, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So how do we show others the Father through the life of Jesus? How do we do that?
By being more Christ-like.
By being more Christ-like. That's one big way, yeah. Like, we're called Christians because little Christs, right? Like that's where the term came from. So we act like him, we are like him. And so we show others the Father through how we ourselves attempt to embody. Yeah, right? What's the other way? There's another important way. Any thoughts about that? Our current series, what we're just embarking on, we started 2 weeks ago, we're just going to continue on, is all about this. And we're calling it, well, we're actually not totally sure what we're talking, what we're calling it, but kind of like speaking of Jesus. We tell his stories. All the stories of Jesus' life. The ins and the outs, the ups and the downs, the shapes and contours of his life. We tell them. As we share them, we're painting pictures of what Jesus is like. And as we paint pictures of what Jesus is like to those that are around us, guess what? They can see the Father. They can see what God is really like. Make sense? Yeah. So we share the stories. And the Word becoming flesh and dwelling among us. Why did he do that? Why did the Word become flesh and dwell among us? So we can see and know the Father. But the Word needs to become fresh to us. And so that's the other kind of title that we're playing with. The Word made fresh. It's a play on words. The Word made flesh. You know, the Word became flesh. The Word made fresh. That's what, like, to introduce people to Jesus in ways that they haven't necessarily seen him. Or they haven't known him to be that way. The Word needs to become fresh to us. Not new, but like reimagined. The stories of Jesus, all the shapes
of his life and all the stories, the parables, 49 or 52, depending on how you define parable. All the stories that he told and all the other stories that the gospel writers included in the gospels, in the four gospels, but all those, to know them like the back of our hands, so that we can share and we can see and know God, but also invite others into that process. That's the heart of what we're wanting to try to get out of those next few things. What do you think Jesus' mission was? I got lots of questions for you guys today, so there's some wrong answers, but lots of right answers. So don't feel bad. But what if we were to take some stabs at sort of defining what Jesus' mission was?
Yeah. To destroy the works of the devil.
To destroy the works of the devil. Okay. Good. What other stats? To
reveal the Father.
ding, ding, ding. To reveal the Father. Yeah, okay. What else?
I was just going to say that.
You were going to say the same thing?
I learned that in Father's heart.
That's what you learned at Father's heart at the sessions.
He said it was finished.
Okay.
Finished because
he revealed. That was my next point. But you just preach it, sister. That's a really interesting point, okay? So in John 19, verse 28, this is what it says. Okay, this is what it says here. This is what John records. Jesus knew that his mission was now finished. And he goes on. But Jesus knew that his mission was now finished. In other words, it's done. It's over. His mission is complete. But guess what? This is pre-Easter. Before he was crucified, his mission was finished. It's before he was resurrected that he said his mission was finished. I mean, I know he said also on the cross, it's finished. But there was something about what he did, how he lived, what he was doing, that was completed in his lifetime. And what was that? I think you hit it on the nail. He showed us the Father. He showed us, he showed them, and through them us, what God is like, through the shape of his life, showing us what God was like. His mission was finished. And so if his mission was to show us God, to be God flesh out, incarnated, right, with flesh on, his mission was done, right? Yes, he came to destroy the works of the enemy. Yes, he came to forgive sins and make a way for us to be in perfect relationship with our Father. So, who's heard of Joe Cocker? Yeah, English rocker dude. He played at Woodstock. He sang it. If you don't know his name, you'll probably know the song. I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. You know that song, right? Or... What's that?
Isn't that the theme song for the Wonder Years?
Is it really? Okay.
He didn't write that.
He didn't? But he sang it.
He's
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, but he sang that.
You are so beautiful.
Yeah, you are so beautiful. Okay.
No.
So he had this ranch, and this Joe Cocker dude, he had this ranch in Colorado. As English blues rockers are prone to do, I suppose. He had this ranch in Colorado, and his neighbor also had a ranch. It was the neighboring ranch. This neighbor was a Christian guy, and they had been kind of lived side by side in the ranch. I don't know exactly what it looked like, but I imagine that it was kind of this big ranch with lots of backcountry, horseback riding, lonely times, and nice. But as neighbors do, they got to know each other, and then, you know, and this Christian guy was like, he knew that this was Joe Cocker. It's a big deal. It's a kind of famous guy, rocker dude. And as good Christians tend to do, he was like, well, it'd be awesome if I could help this guy come to Jesus and believe in Jesus. So he kind of embarks on this journey over years of like sowing the seeds, praying for, but never would like come straight up and talk about Jesus. Never mentions the name. Not even sure if Joe Cocker knew that this guy was a Christian, but he was just like, so on the seas. And then this guy, Carl Medeiros, who we mentioned 2 weeks ago, he wrote this book. It's called Speaking of Jesus. Anyways, he's this really interesting guy. He shows up, and what he does is he travels around the world and just talks about Jesus. It's kind of his thing. He just shares stories of Jesus in all kinds of various circumstances. And he shows up at this guy's ranch, the neighbor of Joe Cocker, and they're hanging out. And the neighbor says, so, Carl, you want to go meet Joe Cocker? And Carl's like, yeah, dude, I want to go meet Joe Cocker. Absolutely, I want to go meet Joe Cocker. And the neighbor guy says, but just one condition. Can't talk about Jesus. Because, like, I've been prepping this guy for a long time. And if you go and start talking about Jesus, you're just going to blow the whole thing up. You're just going to, like, all the work that I've done, it's just going to be all shattered and my cover will just blow up. And Carl says, I can't talk about Jesus. It's just what I do. He just always talk about Jesus. So anyways, they agree to go. And he begins, and they strike up conversation, and it's kind of neat, but they're all like, he's in this rock star's house, and it's like, this is really cool, and kind of fun, and some conversation comes up, and he begins to share some stories about how what this Joe Cocker guy was talking about, how it reminded Carl of Jesus. And he's looking over at his friend. His friend's like looking at him, kind of very, very insecure, highly insecure, and like, not knowing, where is this going to go? How is this going to blow up? Is this Joe Cocker rocker being going to like kick us out of his house and stuff? But just the opposite happens, actually. It's like, what? Really? I didn't know Jesus was like that. I didn't know he was like that. And he told him a few other stories. And he was like, I've never heard this before. This is totally, like, he'd heard some of the Sunday school stories, but some of the interpretations and the radical nature of Jesus and how he engaged in his culture and the people and both the confrontation and the blessing that he brought through the stories, through his parables and the stories about him, it was made fresh to this Joe Cocker dude. And this Joe Cocker looks over at his neighbor and says, you knew all this? What the bleep have you told me before? It illustrates a really neat point, okay? That the stories of Jesus need to become fresh to us, not new, not like told in unique sort of ways. It's not like talking about new translations of the Bible, but how do we connect the dots? And not shy away from it. Not shy away from talking about Jesus. Just simply sharing his stories. And his stories are winsome. Like we shared a couple weeks ago, I'll remind you, of the same guy walking up and down the street, interviewing people, 100 people, on the streets of Boulder, Colorado, and asked two questions. The first question was, what do you think about the church? And 100% of the people had negative experiences about the church. Negative things to say about the church. Negative to, like, raving mad. And then the second question was, what do you think about Jesus? And 100% of the respondents were 100% positive. Like positive to glowing positive. Tears. These are not Christian people. There's something about Jesus, his stories, the shapes, the contours of his life, that's incredibly winsome. It needs to become fresh to us as a church. Needs to become fresh. That reminds me of Jesus is another way of doing that and looking in our lives. Like I can think of a few times, actually with the School of Justice students. Let's see what it was now. But there was one in particular near the beginning of the school. He was telling me like he's wrestling with this certain thing and said, man, how you handled that situation totally reminded me of Jesus. And he was like, what? Are you kidding? No. What? Really? How? And then we like unpackage it a bit together. It's really, like, it's just making it fresh. It's making it real for the people around us. It's making it real for the people around us. So how can we show others the Father through the life of Jesus? Well, we tell the stories of Jesus. And we embody the stories of Jesus. And when we see Jesus-like activity around us, to point it out, say, hey, that reminds me of someone. That makes sense? Okay, so, and 2 weeks ago, to kick this off, we looked at the woman in adultery, right? So I just want to refresh just our minds and sort of pick up that story where we left off with this understanding of what we're talking about, Jesus and his mission. And so you remember this story in John chapter 8? Remember that? Who was there? Who? 2 weeks ago? So, okay, maybe there's a bunch of us that missed it. That's okay. So this is the story of the woman that was caught in adultery. So maybe I'll just quickly read it just to refresh your memories. But this was during a time in the Jewish calendar. It was called the Festival of Shelters. There's lots of people. Jesus is trying to remain out of view in the chapter before. He was like, no, I've got... His disciples are trying to convince him to come. He's like, no, my time hasn't come. But then we read on that he kind of snuck in. He took the back roads. Literally, he took the back roads. So he snuck in anyways into the temple. And we find that he's been hanging out, and he comes early every morning to teach in the temple. And so this is the eighth day of the festival. So in other words, that's the Sabbath day. So on the Sabbath, we find Jesus in the temple, teaching. And that's where the story begins. So the very last verse of chapter 7 and into chapter 8 says this. Then the meeting broke up and everyone went home. So that's the teaching, the gathering. Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning, he was back again at the temple, so the eighth day. A crowd soon gathered, and he sat down and taught them. As he was speaking, the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery. Caught in the act. They put her in front of the crowd. You can picture that. They pushed her into the front. Teacher! They said to Jesus, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. The law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say? They were trying to trap him into saying something that they could use against him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote in the dust with his finger. Wouldn't you? They kept demanding an answer, so he stood up again. All right. But let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. Then he stooped down again and wrote in the dust some more. When his accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. Then Jesus stood up again and said to the woman, where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them condemn you? No, Lord, she said. I think you might have a very bit more emotion in her life. And Jesus said, neither do I. Go and sin no more. We're not going to unpackage that today because we did it 2 weeks ago, but let me ask you this question. Who is the controversy with? Who is the controversy with? End of story. Yeah, verse 3. The Pharisees. The teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, the scribes and Pharisees. As you can say, it's the translation. The teachers of the law. Similar theme throughout Jesus' ministry and throughout all the Gospels. And verse 5 kind of brings it into focus for us. Remember what verse 5 says? We can read it there. The law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say? So the law of Moses says this. What does Rabbi Jesus have to say? Interpret it for us. It's kind of what they're saying, except they're being really sneaky. Because they have the appearance of being zealous for the law, but they were missing something really big. For one, the law speaks of death of both a man and a woman. So they only had the woman. Presumably, if she was caught in the act of adultery, there would have been two of them? Pretty safe presumption, I would say. But they only grab her. for whatever reason, been over. And even though the law speaks of the death of both the man and the woman, that's only after a careful trial and a chance to confess. There was, and they needed two firsthand witnesses. So obviously there's just hypocrisy at work here. They claim to be zealous for the law, but really they want to trick Jesus. And so he stoops down, writes in the dust, and like we said 2 weeks ago, it's unlawful to even write two letters in the Sabbath. On the Sabbath, unlawful to write even just two letters. But writing in the dust was permissible. That's the Shabbat, that's the oral interpretation of the law. So there's the law, and then there's how to apply it, which is the Shabbat, which is the Jewish collection of how to interpret the law. And so it said you could write in the dust. And so that's what Jesus is doing. So as he's doing that, he's like, I know the law. Can't you think? And there's some other things going on too. But he's the only one that can condemn her. He calls her to a new life. He's not just saving a woman's life here. What is he doing? I mean, obviously he saved her life. But he's not just saving a life. Here's my thought. He's providing a commentary on how to apply the law. He's providing his own commentary on how to apply the law. What it means to love God. Okay, we're going to flesh that out a little bit more. He's providing a better explanation. He's making the word fresh. Here, let me ask you this question. Why does the church generally have a bad reputation? Judgment? Like, say more about that.
Sense of entitlement.
Okay, sense of entitlement, but judgment?
I think people feel more oppressed and not well. And so they feel like it's not a state. The church is not a state.
Okay. What do you mean by sense of entitlement, Ryan?
We think we're sometimes we think we're special or more loved because we believe God loves us. I'll think about it.
Well. Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
It's like when you got it, they don't.
They so yeah.
Us okay. And them.
Yeah. Sure, us and them. Okay.
Yeah, there's a condescension. Kind of that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Sure. That's fair. I mean, it's not fair, but that's a fair assessment of the situation. Generalizing. It's the reason why 100% of the people that Carl asked on the street, what do you think about the church, were negative. We're known by what we're against, typically, not what we're for. Right? We can all fill in the blanks of what the church generally is against. And everybody out there could do that as well. Or they just wouldn't care. It's just like totally irrelevant. The law was given to reveal right and wrong. So the law of Moses was given to reveal right and wrong. True, and it's true for all time and place. But its application, in other words, the way it's fleshed out, the way it's interpreted and then lived out, how it's embodied through God's people isn't the same through time and place. It's not an arbitrary set of rules. So if you think of the Ten Commandments, or all the laws and orders, of course. It's not an arbitrary set of rules that God set up to test our obedience. The law, someone said this, the law is the transposition into human society of patterns of relationship that reflect God's character. So in other words, if you want to show people what God is like, you do this law. You abide by the law. And so in our story here, adultery is wrong. Why? Because it violates covenants or relationships of faithfulness. And that violation is wrong because God himself is characterized by faithfulness. Does that make sense? You follow me? So the law, and so if we're, if we're continuing on this sort of understanding of why the church has a bad rap, and a lot of it has to do with judgmental kind of thinking, law-oriented thinking, right? What's right and what's wrong, and applying it woodenly out there. You know? And this is what Jesus says, Matthew 5:7. Don't misunderstand why I've come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses or the writings of the prophets. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. In other words, I came to flesh them out. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. John 8:5. The law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say? See what's going on here? He's providing commentary through how he's acting to show us what the Father is like. To show us what God is like. There's another huge section in Matthew where this is really explicit. Any thoughts about where that is? I'll give you a hint. It's written on our chalkboard right there this morning. But it says, you've heard it said this, but I tell you this. Does that sound familiar at all? So it's, you've heard it said, this is the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. You've heard it said, don't murder. That's the law, right? You've heard that. You've heard the law. Don't murder. But I tell you what? Yeah, it says don't even be angry or curse someone. In other words, anger which if unimpeded would generate murder is a spiritual equivalent of murder. Right? He's fleshing it out for us. He's like getting from the letter of the law to the spirit of the law. That makes sense? So he said, I tell you, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery, but I tell you, don't even look lustfully. Because then you'll commit adultery in your heart. He's fleshing it out. You've heard it said, a man can divorce his wife. But I tell you, he says, unless she's unfaithful, don't do it, because you'll cause her and yourself to be in adultery. He's fleshing it out. He's providing like this commentary. How to do this? How do you live out the law in a way that's faithful to the spirit of the law? And that's why I think that the church, and again, general, has a bad rap. We've kind of missed the spirit of the law in applying the letter of the law to those around us. We're going to miss the mark. We will miss the mark if we do that. And that's what this series is all about. Is how do we do it? How do we do it? How do we share the stories of Jesus, which so obviously give life? And cut to the chase, too. Not all about patting on the back or awesome. No. It's like both, right? He said to that lady, you know, basically, I forgive you, but don't sin again. Like, don't sin. Like, it's calling us into this deeper, more full sense of life. You've heard it said, don't break your vows, but I say, don't even make any vows. Just let your yes be yes or your no be no. In other words, oaths. Vows are a poor substitute for integrity. Just live. Just say yes and do it. Or say no and don't do it. Right? You've heard it said, an eye for an eye. In other words, the punishment must match the injury. But I tell you, don't resist evil person. Offer the other cheek. Go the extra mile. And that, by the way, that wasn't like a little flake. If someone slaps you on the cheek, give them the other cheek. It's talking about a public affront to your honor. Your dignity. That's what he's talking about there. So in other words, if someone publicly affronts your honor or humiliates you, just go with it. Because those who are secure in their status before God don't need human honor anyways. You've heard it said, love your enemy, love your neighbor, hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemy. See what I'm getting at here? He's providing commentary. He's espousing the law. He's saying, this is how to apply it. When you apply it well, You show the world what my Father's like. You show yourself, your kids, your neighbors, your friends, your family, believers, non-believers, the whole gamut, everybody around you. When you live it out, when you flesh it out, you show them what my Father's like. That's his mission. Right? That's his mission. The law won't change us. Galatians talks, it's really interesting actually, but Galatians 3, it says, before the way of faith in Christ was available to us, we were placed under guard by the law. We were kept in protective custody, so to speak, until the way of faith was revealed, I mean Jesus. Let me put it another way, Paul says. The law was our guardian until Christ came and protected us until we could be made right with God through faith. And now that the way of faith has come, we no longer need the law as guardian. You know what the word is a guardian? It's pedagogos, which where we get the word pedagogy from, to teach it, right? Theory of teaching, right? And a pedagogos was a slave, and the job of that particular pedagogos slave was to take the children from the home to school and back. That's what Paul is saying that the law is like. Protect us. Keep us safe, but it won't save us. It won't change us. That's the role of the law. It's like a pedagogue. That kind of relationship. It's good. It's good. It's good to have protection and to be kept safe, but it won't change us. But the spirit of the law, the spirit will change us. We'll talk more about that. So here's some questions that I'd like us to think about. And actually, we're really looking for real answers on this. And so even if we don't come up with some, it's going to help us sort of guide the shape of this series a bit, depending on how we respond to this. But so in your life, and actually, probably more in the lives of those that you know around you. What does this story of Jesus, this one of the woman being caught in adultery, and his, the way he handled it, the character of God that's revealed through that story, what situations do you see in your life? What people are in your life that can really benefit from hearing that message? Can you think of someone in your circles where that story can become fresh? Spirit can speak and bring life in a fresh way. Can you think of something? See, our goal for this whole time is to help us make those connections. The stories of Jesus to the stories of the people around us. How can we make those connections? And we want, after this is done, to have people sitting here. Not really sitting here. Sitting here, but it's not about filling seats. It's about introducing people to the King and bringing them into the kingdom, into community. That as a result of us making some dots, like connecting the dots, stories that are written about Jesus and connecting it to the lives of people around us and making it fresh, just like my friend Carl made it fresh to this Joe Rocker. Okay. It's fresh, it's real. It's like if it like applied the law, found the spirit of it, and went with it. It's going to be people that are going to come to know Jesus in new ways, and we're going to see Jesus in new ways, in fresh ways, as we explore the different stories. So here's a question that maybe we can answer out loud. And we'll end with this. But what are the big issues that people in your life are dealing with? Actually, why don't we do this? Let's gather into groups. Just like turn to like 3, 4, or 5 people, and let's come up with some lists. What are the big issues that people in your life are dealing with? And what we'll do with those lists is find stories of Jesus that deal with those issues, so that we can learn how to apply them, how to tell the story, how to tell and introduce people to Jesus. This is how we do it, right? Okay? Can we do that? Does that make sense, you guys? You follow? Is this okay? So let's break up. 3 or 4 people. If you don't know them, just make sure you introduce yourself. And this is the question. What are the big issues that people in your life are dealing with? But can we hear from each of the groups real quickly? Not don't give us the whole arc of your conversations, but like, can you boil it down into real still? Like, what are the issues? Can we do that? Just real briefly, like take a minute to do this. I'll do it. Is that even possible? Am I asking something that's impossible? No. Okay, go for it. Give us what do you got?
People feel self-sufficient, they feel a need to have a glory and care about God. And the church being, a judging place, and I guess especially in like the young academic crowd, obviously homosexuality, or they feel like the church is judging that very harshly, therefore they just like are not interested in the church that judges or like pushes people away.
What about you guys?
As you're sharing about the different things that you to
challenge of trying to be more like Jesus or revealing Jesus in environments where it would be viewed as weakness to be more like Jesus, and where it would open up the door to be undermined, you know what I mean? Or in environments where people just don't value that kind of activity at all, they value the opposite. How challenging it is.
So we talked about lack of identity or direction, or not having a purpose, and then also worry and anxiety.
Awesome, that's great. Thank you guys. We're gonna use this stuff to help us with this. So bless you. And you continue on your conversations, but we're done.